Welcome to Lessons in Leadership, Steve Adubato with my co-anchor and executive producer of the series, Mary Gamba. Hey, Mary, we kick off this particular edition of Lessons in Leadership with a conversation we have with our good friend Bob Garrett, CEO of Hackensack Meridian Health. But in the beginning, he talks about his dad. His dad had recently passed, and we were talking about the influence that Bob's father has had on him, not just as a leader, one of the top leaders in healthcare, but also as a human being. And you're fortunate enough to still have your dad in your life. I've talked about my dad a million times, who passed early on in COVID, who had a massive impact on my life. If your dad's watching right now, if you were to say to Bill, your dad, the greatest impact he's had on who you are as a person, how would you respond?
Really, just very simply, he is everything. And he lives every day saying that he has no regrets, which is so hard for people to say. And I'm like, Dad, come on, there's got to be one regret. And he said, absolutely not. He said every single day he wakes up with a positive attitude. He has more energy than anyone I know. He's 85 years old. True story, went to Atlantic City. He wanted to stay up. It was after midnight. Bill and I were like, my husband and I said, we want to go to bed, Dad. He's like, come on, we could still keep partying. And you want to talk about embracing life. He is somebody that embraces life and has taught me to do the same thing.
My dad used to give a lot of speeches. We'd have to sit there and listen to his, well, I guess it's no different for our kids now. So yeah. my father would actually tell us where he was about to tell us something that we needed to know. It was very important. It was a speech. Your dad doesn't seem like that kind of guy.
He's not. And he tells stories. He is a great storyteller, but he wants to invite you in and share with you. He'll often say he doesn't want to engage in TMI, too much information. So he'll prefer to listen and share anecdotes and personal stories, which to me, I treasure because my boys lean in, they laugh, they share stories and response, but there's no lecturing ever with my dad. It's always just that engagement and going back and forth.
And your boys would be your two sons who are... Joe is 20.
Yeah, they're 20 and 23, about 23. To be 21 and 24.
Okay, this is Bob.
I know I look young, but.
Of course you do. And Bob Garrett also talked about AI and technology, also well-being. Mary and I in our seminars, leadership seminars, talk a lot about well-being, wellness, and leadership. This is Bob Garrett, an important conversation. He starts out by talking about his dad, a big impact on his life. I think you'll appreciate it. We're joined once again by Bob Garrett, Robert C. Garrett, CEO of Hackensack Meridian Health. Bob, good to have you with us again.
It's great to be here. Thank you, Steve.
Bob, can we do this? I want to talk about artificial intelligence, consumerism, if you will, the Amazon culture and how it relates to healthcare in just a second. This is part of our series, Leaders in Healthcare. But I want you to do this for us. We're taping this interview at the end of September into October. You recently... lost your dad.
And yes.
And you've talked about your dad a lot. Talk about your dad and his impact on you, not just as a healthcare leader, but as a human being.
Yeah, thank you for that, Steve. And, you know, my dad had a great run. He passed away at 94, and he lived those 94 years in a really complete way. And I learned so much from him. He was a great man in so many different ways. You know, a couple things that, you know, that I learned from him directly was his sense of optimism, you know, his positivity. You know, I remember stories when we were kids. We would go down to Florida for a vacation. It would rain 4 out of the 6 days we were there, but all he could talk about for months after that were the 2 sunny days, and that was kind of like his mantra. He was very positive, very optimistic, and you know, as a leader, I think that's a really important quality, and I've taken that away definitely from my dad. The other thing, you know, was his work ethic. He was sometimes at my mom's chagrin. He worked long hours, you know, 7 days a week as a pharmacist. He was a pharmacist, a retail pharmacist, and you know, he valued relationships as well. I learned a lot about that in working with him, whether it was relationships with doctors. doctors, with patients, customers, with team members, with his own team. I saw it firsthand, and you know, he was tough because, you know, I used to work with him. He used to bring me in a little bit, and if I did well, he'd compliment me. But if I didn't, the first thing I would get was he used to kind of bite his lip a little bit, like, you know, I get that, like, you know, look, and then I knew there was going to be a statement to follow. But I did learn, honestly, I did learn about work ethic, about hard work, and that it does produce results. But in the process of that hard work, I learned how relationships are so important. So, you know, I really, you know, we got great memories of my dad, and we're celebrating his great life, and certainly those lessons learned.
Well said. Best to you and your family on that, Bob.
Thank you.
And also condolences, which I've said privately. I just want to share that with you.
Thank you,
there's
Steve.
No good transition for this, Bob. From your dad to artificial intelligence, right?
which was not part of my dad's era necessarily, but I think he would, if he were still with us, he would embrace it. Yeah.
Okay, so here's the thing. The name of the book coming out is Why Not? We talked about this in another segment. I argue that AI is not a why not thing. It's you have no choice. Here's my question. I want to frame it the right way. I keep, because I struggle with it, I'm afraid of it, I'm concerned. Either you lean in and engage it and use it, or you get hurt by it. Is that too simplistic, Bob?
Not at all. I think you have to lean in. Listen, it's a transformative technology, probably the biggest transformative technology that we've seen in a long time, if not ever. And you know what? We can't dismiss it. It's here. It's going to stay. I mean, every new technology, every new innovation over the history of time, there were doubters at first. But in the healthcare space, I mean, we think about it very strategically. We think about it in certain areas of a focus where we can really, I think, transform healthcare. So just a couple examples.
Sure.
We think AI has potential, tremendous potential to help clinicians detect disease earlier, like chronic kidney disease, which could avoid years of dialysis or even a kidney transplant. In the area of cancer, it can really help us design precision treatment plans, very specific to that patient's needs. Not all patients are the same, and you know, everybody has a different genetic profile. It can help us streamline really administrative efficiencies, like help us on the revenue cycle, meaning our billing and collection process. It can help us in the OR as far as scheduling. And then the last thing I'll mention is it can help alleviate burnout. We're seeing that in healthcare a lot. Physician burnout, nursing burnout. So as an example, you know, there's an expression in healthcare called pajama time, where physicians, you know, can spend some time with their families, or even spend more time directly with patients. But through AI, there can be note summarization, there can be note taking that saves hours of physicians doing that in a kind of old fashioned way. They get more pajama time, they get more time with their patients, and in the nursing sphere as well. Just an AI driven virtual nursing program can free up nurses to spend more time with their patients, less time on charting, on administrative tasks, that kind of thing. And guess what? That's why nurses went to nursing school. That's why doctors went to medical school. They want to spend time with their patients.
So interesting. By the way, since you mentioned pajama time, is that right? Is that what it is, Bob?
That's what they call it, pajama time. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask you, because you and I talk about wellness and well-being all the time. Real quick on this, the connection in your mind, whether you call it, forget about pajama time, because there's a place for pajama time and wellness, but then there's also a place for well-being, fitness, and taking care of oneself mentally, physically, et cetera. You connect that to leadership. I know you do.
Yeah, it's really important. I mean, I think the most effective leaders out there, you know, are fit. I mean, they try to be fit. They try to eat right. I mean, I think it just adds to your effectiveness as a leader. You know, it helps you mentally, it helps you physically. And, you know, let's face it, leadership can be a very tough run and, you know, tough engagement. So you need to have your health and you need to have your sleep. I used to say earlier on in my career that sleep was overrated, but I do not say that anymore. It's not true. And my clinician friends corrected me on that, and they were absolutely right on that, because it is important. So, you know, I think that balance balance of work and lifestyle is also an important aspect of being an effective leader. But yeah, I definitely want to share with the audience that I'm a true proponent of health and its correlation with leadership.
Well said. Last question, Bob. A minute or less. Consumerism and healthcare. The so-called Amazon culture. Connect it back to healthcare. Minute or less.
Well, Steve, that's a great point. And we have, as an example, at Hackensack Meridian Health, we have an organization that we partner with, which is called One Medical. It's a division of Amazon, actually, and we are extending our primary care network through a partnership with Amazon. We're going to build up to 20 primary care centers in New Jersey, and folks that are Amazon Prime members, by virtue of their membership, they get a discount in joining the One Medical network. So to us, that's going to extend primary care. In New Jersey, one out of three New Jerseyans don't have access to a primary care physician. So we've applauded Amazon getting into this space and partnering with organizations like Hackensack Meridian Health.
And let me just, I should have disclosed this earlier. Hackensack Meridian Health is a longtime underwriter of our program, programming, particularly around vaccine awareness, a program we're doing in cooperation with the New Jersey Department of Health, creating information or providing information that's accurate and relevant, and also dealing with public health and the public health infrastructure and trust in public health. And also, I've done a whole range of leadership coaching at HMH. Bob, thank you. We wish you all the best.
Thank you so much, Steve.
You guys stay with us. We'll be right back. This edition of Lessons in Leadership is made possible by the Buccino Leadership Institute at Seton Hall University, Prager Metis, Valley Bank, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825, the North Ward Center, Gingoli Construction, the New Jersey Sharing Network, Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey, The Helix, Fedway Associates, Inc., the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Choose New Jersey, and Seton Hall University, showing the world what great minds can do since 1856.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media.
At the Coriell Institute for Medical Research, we choose New Jersey because it's a great place to work and it's a great place to live. We work on understanding disease, but also curing diseases through drug development and clinical trials. This is such a central state, and it's such a rich state in resources for medical research that it allows us to do the research that we need to do. This is New Jersey. It all happens here.
We are honored to be joined by Dr. Dion Ledford, who is Executive Director and Superintendent of Roseville Community Charter Schools. Dr. Ledford, great to have you with us.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
You got it. The website's up right now. Tell us what Roseville Community Charter Schools are all about.
So Roseville Community Charter School is a public charter school, K-4 originally, but we were just approved for grade 5. So we are a K-5 public charter school in the state, great state of New Jersey, of course, in the city of Newark. But we serve children within the city of Newark and the surrounding areas. So not all of our children are residents of Newark, but the majority are.
We are doing, this is part of our Lessons in Leadership series. We'll also potentially air it on our one-on-one series because it has so much value on both platforms. But your passion for education, urban education, and frankly, educational leadership comes from where?
Well, that's a good question. I have a legacy of educators in my family. Both my parents were New York City public educators. My father, by way of being a professional athlete and being injured early in his career, had, that's why education is so important, had a plan B that he was able to fall back on which was education. So both of my parents are retirees of the New York City public school system. So I could say that's kind of where I get it from. But I would also say that when I was at Hampton University, psychology major, I minored in special education. So I took some education courses, but I said I was not going to follow in my parents' footsteps. And
What
so I was
happened?
going to go the
What
route
happened?
of so, and then they put me in the laboratory school to do my rotation. And I got to meet a teacher by the name of Miss Little John.
Say it again,
And
because we're big fans of recognizing Miss Little John.
yes, Miss Little John,
Go
who was
ahead.
the teacher of the integrated preschool program at the laboratory school at Hampton University. And she changed my whole mindset with regard to teaching, and particularly teaching children with special needs.
It's amazing how often a teacher changes the course of our life. I'm sorry. I'm in because I'm thinking of
It's so true.
Miss. I'm you know I'm thinking Miss Hoffman, my first grade teacher at Ridge Street School in Newark, in the North Ward of the great city of Newark. Miss, who's been long gone, Miss Hoffman. Thank you, Miss Hoffman. Go ahead, Mary.
Oh, I'm thinking about Miss Sagar. She was my kindergarten or first grade teacher back in the day in Fords, New Jersey. So I think everyone has that teacher in their lives that just has impacted them. And speaking of impact, one of many initiatives that we were looking into and I'm fascinated by, and I want to look down, the Self and Wellness Initiative, and SELF stands for Social Emotional Learning, Fun and Wellness Initiative. Talk about that and what type of skills the self and wellness program is providing for the students.
I'm so glad you asked about that because that is my, this is like my baby. So when I first started in this role, I knew the importance of social emotional learning well before it was really something that became a new initiative with regard to education. I had always been a special educator, so I understood the impact of social emotional wellness on academic achievement and school performance and success in school and success in life. So when I came here, the first thing I did was I shifted the title that used to it was a title that was called like Dean of Discipline or something like that in the school. And I spoke to the board about, can I hire a behaviorist instead? Because I know the importance of understanding the function of behavior. It's not so much extinguishing the behaviors that we don't want to see. It's understanding the function of the behavior and then replacing it with a more socially acceptable, productive behavior. Because we all have those. We all have behaviors that we do it because we get what we want from these behaviors, right? So the more we get what we want from these behaviors, the more we repeat it. And that can be negative reinforcement or positive reinforcement. So the Self and Wellness program grew from that. We were very lucky to be able to write a grant. I wrote a grant back in 2020. And the dates I give you are going to, it's going to start to make you think like, it's almost like I knew something. But in January of 2020, I wrote this grant, and the Victoria Foundation and Newark Trust for Education granted us $50,000 to start this program. And I titled it Social Emotional Learning, Fun and Wellness. And then I was like, oh, it's self and wellness, which talks about self-care, wellness, mental health, social emotional development, all of those things. And then 2 months later, we had a global pandemic, right? So we had to shift gears, but we continued that program even virtually. And that was our lifeline for our families. Our self and wellness program became, I didn't know it at the time, became the lifeline and the connection that we maintained through my technology plan, which who knew was to have
Right.
every child have a laptop. Who knew? I did that back in the fall of 2019, that I knew that I wanted every child to have a laptop because I felt like in this community, not every child has access to technology like in some other
Right.
communities. And thank goodness I did because that was our lifeline to that. So the Self and Wellness Program provides weekly yoga, mindfulness art. This integrated into our art lessons. It's Parent University I started here, where it educates our parents on how to support their children and their education. So there's a lot of components to our Self and Wellness Program.
So much. And 4 months before March 13th, 2020, when COVID becomes a reality for so many of us, and every one of those kids had a laptop, that is fortuitous to say the least. Let me follow up on this. I'm curious about, we've been doing a lot of programming on urban education and what seems to be working, and also what doesn't work. Along those lines, what are a few of the most important attributes of a charter school, of an urban public charter school? And I think you know, my late dad started the Robert Treat Academy in Newark, with the first charter school in the great state of New Jersey. And my sister, Teresa, wound up being the principal later on. They're my friends there. They are great. And Marcelino was over there.
Grillo, yes.
Yeah. Actually, we did an interview with him talking about Robert Treat. Here's the question. I know a little bit about Robert Treat and the keys to their success. A few of the keys to the success of your children and teachers include?
Well, I'm going to start with our CHEER values. Our CHEER values are collaboration, honesty, excellence, effort, and respect. So they're the cornerstone of our program here. We believe here at Roseville Community Charter School that every child can be college bound, or if not college bound, can be successful in life as long as they are nurtured. So the environment must be nurturing. So that's why the Self and Wellness Program is so important to me to have in place here. It's about community, though, also. So a cornerstone of our school, we have the word community in our name. So community is also very important. And so our scholars do a lot of community service, but also civic leadership is important, because in order for communities to thrive, you have to have leadership, and it should be homegrown leadership. And so I would say that those are the key attributes of our school, but also I think there are key attributes really that children need to have in order for them to be successful in life.
Well said. You've just been listening to and watching Dr. Dion Ledford, Executive Director and Superintendent, Roseville Community Charter Schools. And I also want to thank Calvin Ledford. He's a big fan of yours. Over at the BSDG Foundation. He's a big fan of your husband. Did you know that?
Yeah, I hoped that, but you just now made it 100% clear.
It's a fact. And Dr. Ledford, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Steve. I appreciate it. I appreciate this opportunity.
We got it. Thank you so much. We'll have you back again. For Mary and myself, stay with us. We'll be right back after this. Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media.
At Mush Foods, we choose New Jersey because it's the heart of the Northeast. And we knew that if we can succeed here, we can succeed everywhere. It's hard to have this kind of manufacturing employees and also high educated employees in the same place. And here you have it. Then you have also the colleges that specifically focus on food science. So you have both of them. And that's the magic. This is New Jersey. You can do anything here.
Welcome back to Lessons in Leadership. Steve Adubato, Mary Gamba. Mary Gamba, that's her last name. G-A-M-B-A. Check it out. Hey, Mary, I know I mentioned it in a couple of shows in the past, but this book is on my nightstand, part of the Lessons in Leadership library, 10 best books in leadership that keep rotating. Some books are out. This book is in. Not a new book, but Adam Grant, who is a psychologist, Brilliant book. He's over at the Wharton School. I said previously, I made a mistake and said he was at Harvard. Adam Grant is an organizational psychologist at the Wharton School. Check out his TED Talk, right? We'll put information up there about Adam Grant. Here's the deal. My wife said to me, the subtitle, New York Times bestseller, The Power of Knowing What You Don't Know. And I said to my wife, Jennifer, Jen, I started reading her book at night, and very, very often she asked me to read my book because that helps her fall asleep. So I'm not joking. So I started reading her, and she said, "So you think it's a new idea? The idea of knowing what you don't know?" I said, "No, what I said is that Adam Grant says the best leaders are constantly rethinking what they think they know and not continuing to move along those assumptions and act on those assumptions and those preconceived ideas. They're actually challenging themselves all the time about what they think, getting new information that contradicts or conflicts with what they think, and they're open-minded. It's more complex than that. Mary, to me, thinking again, rethinking what you think you know, learning more, is a massive leadership tool. Go ahead.
It is. And there is nothing more frustrating than being in a conversation or engaging in a meeting with someone that is so rigid, is so, they've got their feet in the sand, they're stuck in the sand, they're not going to move on their beliefs. Because if you are able to share some piece of new information, or if some other new science, new research comes out, you need to be willing to grow, to evolve, to pivot. Because you've said it all the time right here on Lessons in Leadership, the day that we stop learning, evolving, and growing is the day that we die, and you might as well just hang it all up.
You know, it's so interesting because Adam Grant calls it cognitive laziness. And I actually wrote next to, I'm not going to say the names of people I wrote next to this, who are very close friends of mine. You know who you are.
That's so wrong.
You know who they are.
Now
too.
Everyone is saying, is he talking about me?
You know who they are. Translation. People very close to me, and you know them. It's not about my world. It's about anyone. As Mary said, people are convinced of their rightness. No matter what you share with them, no matter if there's new information. And so what happens is they consume information on the internet, wherever they get their news in quotes, that reinforces what they already believe. And if you say, well, do you ever check out such and such? Oh, no, I hate that publication. That website makes no sense. So they refuse to look at anything else. And so, of course, they're right, because what they're looking at tells them they're right. Go ahead.
There is nothing more enjoyable for me than having a conversation and somebody saying, what do you think? What can you share on that? Am I wrong? People have actually said that to me. Do you see things differently? And you just open up. And then that allows you to see their viewpoint as well. So it's that give and take, which to me is one of the key aspects of successful leadership and communication.
You know, you can have different views on things, but when your director, Elvin Badger, puts in the chat, say goodbye now, Mary and Steve. I can't think again about that. We can't reopen that or litigate it.
No arguing.
So goodbye for Mary, myself, and our great team on Lessons in Leadership. We'll see you next time.
This edition of Lessons in Leadership is made possible by the Buccino Leadership Institute at Seton Hall University, PragerMedis, Valley Bank, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825, the North Ward Center, Gingoli Construction, the New Jersey Sharing Network, Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey, The Helix, Fedway Associates, Inc., the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Choose New Jersey, and Seton Hall University, showing the world what great minds can do since 1856.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media.
Gilead, we choose New Jersey because of the people, the potential, and the possibilities. Collaboration's a huge part of what we do. Without collaboration, we wouldn't be where we are today. We can't come up with everything that we need by ourselves, so we are dependent on the infrastructure in the life science industry that New Jersey provides. This is New Jersey. It all happens here.
Introducing the Helix NJ, the Health and Life Science Exchange, a new innovation district located at the heart of the Northeast Corridor, providing industries, universities, and entrepreneurs the critical ecosystem needed to turn great ideas into breakthrough realities. The Helix NJ, where ideas come to life.